We asked Tommy Wattles the other day, where'd you go to high school?
Lake Highlands High School in Dallas, Texas.
They're pretty good these days, aren't they?
Well, they're pretty good in a number of things.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Athletically, certainly. Your kiddos, what are their ages and what schools are they
got
in?
Got four. Our oldest Ann's at Texas A&M University. I have a senior at A&M Consolidated High School. And the twins are now freshmen at Consol. So it's great to have three kids in one school.
Oh, yeah, that is good. All right, well, that's fun. So we're getting ready to get started here. And as always happens, every 2 years, the legislature decides that they want to come in and do some things, and you know, you have to work within those rules. What happened over in Austin that you liked, and what happened over in Austin that you didn't necessarily care for?
Well, I think for public education, it was really a pretty good session, all in all. A number of things did take place. Some things didn't. I think anytime you have a discussion in regards to the 84th Texas Legislature, the backdrop is obviously school funding. I think a lot of folks were waiting to see what's going to happen with the lawsuit that is before the Texas Supreme Court at this time. So nothing major really happened with school funding.
You know, let's talk about that for a second, because Jimmy Don Acock, who was spearheading this, he was the one who finally decided, yeah, we were going to look at it. First, they were going to stop and wait on the courts, and he said they were going to. And he's now since announced his retirement. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be new leadership there. Judge Dietz has stepped down. He is retired. This was the judge who time and again kept sending it back to the courthouse and saying to the legislature, all right, you got to do better. So that player's changed. Is it my understanding now that we're going to have three judges look at this in the future if the Supreme Court throws it back?
If it does get remanded, then we'll go to a three-judge panel.
What do you think about that? Is that a better deal for you?
Well, I think you put your finger on one of the issues, and that's experience and understanding of the situation. So obviously Judge Dietz, having presided over a number of trial court trials, and Chairman Acock with his understanding of school funding, it's hard to bring people up to speed because it is such a complex issue. And so whether it's one person looking at that or three people looking at that, I don't know which one will be better. It's just so complex when it gets remanded back to the trial court level.
So let's say the briefs are filed September the 1st. It goes to Texas Supreme Court. We sure don't know how those nine are going to go about it, but odds are the legislature is going to come back. I can't imagine that they're going to be able to solve this thing. It sounds like the legislature is going to have to do it again. Would you prefer, if they do have to look at school finance again, would you prefer it be in a special session?
Oh, absolutely. It's never been done in a regular session. It's just too much to it to be done. If it were in a special session, then Chairman Acock would still be chairman of the Public Education House Public Ed Committee, and it wouldn't have to deal with all the other issues that the 85th Texas Legislature will have to deal with in the spring of 2017.
Clark Ely joining us, the superintendent of schools in College Station. You know, the other thing is that the legislature keeps messing with the tax situation, the property tax situation. There can be some caps that will be put on. That causes all the entities, not only the city governments, the county governments, but the school districts as well, as to they need to be concerned about whether or not they're going to have the funding that they were promised. We also know that the legislature shot a big hole in funding 4 years ago, and that money hasn't really been fully put back in. Do you see at some point that they may come back and revisit the school finance even before there's some sort of a judgment?
Well, I don't believe they will do it before there's a judgment reached, because we won't be in a full session, I don't believe, until after the
right.
Supreme Court makes mm-hmm. their decision. But I think they'll have the opportunity, if the Supreme Court finds that there's not enough money for a general diffusion of knowledge, or what you and I would call adequacy, then more money would be needed to be put into the system by the legislature. And it would be then up to the legislature to decide what method they would do. The trial court did find this Texas school funding system unconstitutional in four areas. So the adequacy that we just talked about, efficiency, which you and I would call equity, statewide property tax, and suitability. Now, who knows what the Supreme Court will find, whether it's all four, one of the four, and which one. So if they come back and say it's not equitable, then the fix to the equity may look different than the fix to the adequacy. So,
well, again, it's so hard to balance. You can't, I can't imagine that you can have a Lake Highland school district offer the same thing that a Nederland school district does, that a school district out in West Texas does. I mean, that's just very, very difficult, it would seem. How many school districts do we have in Texas?
About 1,030 school districts in Texas, over 254 counties. And so they have lots of different, disparate needs based on their own situation and their own location.
Just as one guy who's got a superintendent's job, one of the things that's been floated time and again and never finds good footing in Austin is the idea of a countywide school district. Not necessarily in Dallas, Houston, Austin, those areas, but in other areas. Your thought, just as one superintendent in Texas?
It is hard. There's, as I said, 254 counties. Some are very rural, and that, and you've got issues in regards to transportation with a number of districts in that county. Some of them are very urban and have lots and lots of school districts within that county. It was tried, actually, back in the late 90s, I guess mid-90s. It was actually found unconstitutional at that time for how they did county educational districts at that time. But I think it holds promise as people think about it just on the surface. Oh, yeah, you won't have to have two superintendents or five superintendents. You can have one. Well, there also is you still have to cover the transportation needs, the child nutrition needs, the curricular needs of an entire county. And so there wouldn't be too much of a loss of employees that way. But I think when it gets right down to it is Texans and their belief in local control and their belief in their local community. And so when you go and talk to whatever county you're talking to, there's five districts in that, and there's five small districts, and they've had that district for over 100 years, and they've got pride in their schools and pride in their district. Texans aren't ready to yield control of what they have and what they're proud of. So that's why I think it really never happens.
So what are your people telling you when they see you? What do they like about College Station schools, and what do they want changed?
Well, what we're seeing is that people are really liking College Station schools, and we're continuing to get a number of folks come and join us. Our growth numbers are tremendous. But one of the things I think we're talking about with our folks is just the belief in our employees. And we believe if we build up our employees, and they will build up our students. I think we're seeing evidence of that, whether it be through test scores or our growth or just the popularity of some of our schools. I think we're seeing that. And so we're really working with our employees to let them know that they have the autonomy they need to do their job, that they matter to us and to our community. And I think that message is really spreading through College Station ISD.
Dr. Clark Ely joining us. He's the superintendent of schools in College Station. All right, here's some numbers from TEA. As far as the what the face of Texas education looks like in public schools. 20 years ago, 47% of the enrollment was Anglo. Now that's 29%. Hispanic was 36%. Now it's 52%. African American was 14%. Now it's 12%. They didn't even have the Asian category 20 years ago, and now it's 3.7. But the big number there, Hispanic goes from 36 to 52. Give us an idea of the snapshot of College Station schools and what it looks like now.
So we're about 53 or 54% Anglo, about 21% Hispanic, 14% African American, and about 7 to 8% Asian. Now, I was an English teacher, Scott, so hopefully that is somewhere near 100. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I hear you.
Somebody on the radio right now is doing the math.
And they are, and they're close. But obviously, your numbers are not nearly the same as the picture of Texas. But it is a different picture than it's been even 5 years ago in College Station schools. Talk about the changes that have happened because the face of the College Station population has changed.
It's changed a little bit. I got here in 2000, so I've been here for 15 years. We were about 10% Hispanic when I got here, and we're about 21%. So we've doubled. Still one in five students in College Station ISD is a Hispanic or Latino. We've seen growth in our dual language programs. In fact, we've had to add two units of dual language in the kindergarten and first grade level just this year because of the growth that we're seeing in that. In College Station ISD, we have a great two-way dual language program. So we have English speakers who are in the program and Spanish speakers in the program. So kids are learning English and Spanish at the same time. They're becoming bilingual and bilingual at the same time.
And by comparison, we had the superintendent of Bryan Schools, Tommy Wallace, with us Friday, told a story about the term maritime being used in a class that he went to. And there were he was disappointed in the low number of kids who had ever been to the ocean. And that is a snapshot of one class within BISD. Tell me how that might possibly compare, if there's any way to compare what you're looking at as far as College Station is concerned when it comes to life experience.
I thought Dr. Wallace did an excellent job of explaining what it is to be a child of poverty. It's not that you aren't intelligent. It's not that you don't have the capacity to learn. It's that you don't come to the school with the same experiences that maybe some of your non-low SES peers do. And I think that's a good example. And we have the same thing in College Station ISD. So as we look at instruction, as we look at the value of field trips and providing experiences for kids, as we look at how we do science instruction, a lot of science instruction needs to be actual demonstration and doing the scientific method, scientific process. So having the opportunity to have those types of experiences are very important for all students, but especially for our students who come from a low wealth background.
So here's the breakdown. You have two high schools, you have two intermediate schools, that's fifth and sixth grade, mm-hmm. two middle schools, seventh and eighth, and you have nine elementary schools.
Yes,
you got a brand new one opening up.
Yes, sir.
You don't have them named after people anymore. We don't do that anymore.
We haven't. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, I've been here 15 years. It's always been a board policy that we don't name them, okay. That we don't name school facilities after people.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's it.
Scott DeLucia High School is not.
But I'm thinking, you know. Anyway, so how many students in your average, kind of go through here, your average intermediate school, how many are you looking at?
Intermediate school, fifth and sixth grade. Yeah. Right now, they're built for about 950 to 980, and we're in the mid-900s, closing in on 1,000 for those. They're really, really tight for those schools, and same with our middle schools.
Okay, same kind of numbers for middle school. That's an ideal. All right, how about your elementary schools?
Elementary schools, we build them usually for about 640 to 660 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that as our growth is so rapid and changes, sometimes they'll grow bigger than that, and then we put a few portable buildings there, and then we go to another bond and build one, and we move folks around. But about 660 is what they're designed for.
Okay, so I'll use the analogy of a snake, tennis ball going through a snake. Do we have a bump anywhere in this enrollment, or is this now going to be a pretty steady flow?
It is. As far as a bump going through the system, we don't have a two back-to-back grade level really big. We just continue to get bigger every year. When I first got here, our kindergarten classes district-wide were 550 to 600 kids, and now they're around 1,100. We just continue to, and as you go throughout the school year, as they matriculate through the system, we're getting into the four digits for some of our elementary grades and the high threes for some of our other grades. And so those kids now are working their way through the system.
You know, I've been here long enough that when they built that school on the other side of Texas Avenue, when they built College Hills over there, those kids over on the other side of Texas Avenue. Now, let's talk about the population shift, the aging of the population, and what does that have to, how do you have to take that into account when you decide where the future campuses will be?
Well, one of the things we do is we respond to growth. We don't try to drive the growth, but we respond to where the rooftop's going and where the kids coming from. And we can see in South College Station between Highway 6 and FM 2154, a lot of rooftops are being put on the ground. There's a lot of tricycles and big wheels out there, and a lot of kids are coming to our schools.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what we respond there. We know that growth is going to continue in that area. We believe that growth is going to start east of Highway 6 fairly soon. And at some point, there will be growth west of the railroad tracks, probably once, you know, there's some more infrastructure that can go in over there, and that will unleash the growth over in that area as well. So trying to look for land and be ready when those opportunities come available is one of the things that we work to do as well.
Dr. Clark Ely joining us. He's the superintendent of schools in College Station. You have a pretty aggressive bond issue that you've got coming up. Give me the highlights of that.
Well, we are, as I say all the time, we're growing. For a little bit of perspective, from 1978 through 2008, every 10 years we grew about 2,000 kids each 10-year period. Starting in 2008 till last fall, we grew 3,300 kids in only 6 years. We've grown 1,500 kids in just the last two. So this has really accelerated our need for additional campuses, and really at the intermediate and middle school level. Scott, you talked about our intermediate and middle schools, and they are tight. They are full. We have four additional portable classrooms at Oakwood Intermediate. We have four additional portable classrooms at AMCMS. If you are a parent or you try to drive by Hollick Avenue or George Bush around 3:30, mm-hmm. 3 to 4 o'clock, or Rock Prairie Road or Graham Road, where Cypress Grove and College Station Middle School are, you know how many kids we've got there and parents that we've got in those schools. So we're really, really tight in those areas. So this bond would address a third intermediate school and a third middle school. It would also be money for a 10th elementary school. We're opening our 9th this year. We believe that based on our projections that we need to open an elementary school about every 3 years. We've opened four elementary elementary schools in the last decade. Mm-hmm. So it just, it's amazing the amount of folks who are coming to College Station ISD.
Okay, assuming these packages pass, where are those likely campus locations?
Well, right now we have some options available for us. We have one piece of property that is north of Greens Prairie Elementary that you could put an intermediate, middle, or elementary school on. It's big enough for all three of those. Next to Greens Prairie Elementary is big enough for an intermediate or an elementary. And we have one piece of property that's west of Welborn Road and just north of Rock Prairie on Holloman Drive South, and that's big enough for an elementary. And that's really what we have right now, and we're always looking for other options as well.
Now tell me, 1378, House Bill 1378, is one of the things that certainly impacted the city of College Station. They decided not to have a bond issue, and that was one of the causative factors. Does 1378 have anything to do with school bond?
It does not. If we had the opportunity to go out and get certificates of obligation, it would. But a municipality has a couple of different options as far as how they can get money for their projects, and one is a general is bonds, and another one is certificates of obligations. They can do public-private partnerships. They have a number of things. The only way that the school district can get the types of funds that they need for building projects like this is through general obligation bonds. And so so that is really the only arrow in our quiver.
Share with us any interactions you had with College Station. City of College Station obviously would be an unfortunate situation if both had to place a bond before the voters at the same time. So talk about that a little bit and how that was possibly coordinated or discussed.
Well, we've talked with the administration for a few months. We had a joint meeting, I think, back in February with the city council and the board to talk about going forward and the needs for both the city and the school district. But for the city, the rules of the game changed very late in the session when 1378 passed. So I know that they had their public meetings and groups together, and so they had to really look at those things that they needed, and they couldn't take a chance of not passing. And a lot of those, quite frankly, have to do with supporting College Station ISD. The road work that they would be doing to support the potential campuses that are going in, and we appreciate our friends at the City of College Station and understanding the needs that the community has when we open schools and we bring so many new kids and new families into the city and into the school district.
Of course, rankings of every campus are important, and the school district as well. House Bill 1842 has decided to put basically a letter grade system, A through F, that we all grew up with when it comes to campuses and school districts. How do you feel about that?
Well, that was a concession between the House and the Senate. The Senate was very big onto the A through F grading. And the House was really looking to look at the accountability system and make some changes with that. So what the House version was taking our four index accountability system and making it into five, and making one of those indices about community-based accountability, which we're all about in College Station ISD. The trade-off was moving from MET standard and improvement required to an A through F grading system. A through F grading system on its face looks like it would make a tremendous amount of sense. But when you look at something as complex as a public high school or a public elementary school, what constitutes an A or what constitutes a C? I think that's going to be very difficult as the Texas Education Agency has to try to determine what an A looks like and what a B and what a C and what an F looks like. And is it just about reading and writing and math? Is it about science and social studies? Is it about kids being college ready? Is it about how you deal with the public's finances? What all will go into that rating? It's hard to boil it down to a single letter.
Sure. Now, and I may be throwing you a curve, and if you don't have the number, that's fine. But one of the metrics also is number of kids in AP classes. Mm-hmm. And can you give me kind of a picture of that as to how many kids you have? And if you don't, that's fine. That's all right. But
I don't have that number of how many we have in AP classes, but I know we have a large number probably of those. We probably, I don't even want to guess how many tech tests. But we pass our AP test with a 3, 4, 5 at a very high rate. Yeah. I do know that.
Okay. And that's the reason, because that is going to be one of the metrics that they have in there in addition to the community.
Part of index number four, sir.
They will do that. A couple of things that I don't know, I'm just kind of personally concerned about, and I'd like you as an educator to address. One of them is I'm I'm concerned about the library systems in public schools and whether you have full-time librarians in there or just library aides. How does that stack up in the especially in the early schools? And because I'm concerned that kids don't pick up books anymore, and it bothers me somewhat. So can you tell me a little bit about your library system?
Certainly. We still have libraries that still have books in them at all of our schools, and we have librarians and library aides, and we should have somebody in every library every day. But for the past several years, we have had librarians split between two campuses, so they're there about half the time, and an aide is there about half the time. But we still have books, and when we're in elementary school and intermediate, our kids are going through the library. They have a rotation. They're checking out books. They're turning them in. They're reading them. They're still doing reports on them. But, you know, the books and the reading isn't just confined to the library, because we have literacy libraries in all of our classrooms. So we have kids who are responding to needs to the books on their level, and so they're reading from their own classroom literacy libraries as well. So we have a lot of opportunities for reading at the early grades, and obviously through our subsequent grades as well, through our literacy libraries, through the regular libraries, and just through our literacy instruction.
Does also bring to mind obviously the government wants to have more full day pre-K programs that cost you money. What's your game plan when it comes to that?
Pre-K was a big issue in the 84th Texas legislature. The new governor came out very strong on the very beginning talking about pre-K. The big issue was, is it going to be half-day pre-K or full-day pre-K? And we have half-day pre-K in College Station ISD on a couple of our campuses. And that we have some folks who go to that. But a lot of people who need pre-K services need the full-day services. Mm-hmm. A lot of our kids who are coming in for pre-K services could use the full-day services as well. And so we would love to see that from College Station ISD's perspective. We do have Head Start in our schools, unlike many school districts in Texas. So we have 198 kids who do have a 3- and 4-year-olds who do have a full day program, but that is capped, and that gets capped pretty soon, and we get to 198 pretty quickly. But the fiscal note on full day pre-kindergarten is pretty massive, and that's why instead of being labeled as full day, it got pretty quickly. It was pre-K, it was just half day, and it became a competitive grant rather than something that was statewide. Mm-hmm. So now I believe they have $130 million, I believe is the number that's in there for half day pre-kindergarten grants.
Would you predict in the future that is going to have to be just schools are going to have to do full day?
I don't know, Scott. It's just I would hope that we would be able to move to that in the future, but I don't know where we're going to go. A lot of it has to do with what the legislature will ultimately have to do in regards to funding and what else is available with the legislature's competing needs. Sure. So it will be interesting to see where we go with that.
Anything else we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about this morning? No,
I don't think so.
Okay.
I tell you, I can just say this, that I'm excited because all of our teachers showed up on Friday. And I can't wait for two things. One, I can't wait for 13,000 kids to show up next Monday and for three of mine to go somewhere. So I'm looking forward to it.
All right, good. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thanks, Scott.